this is Mary J. Blige.
I'm Nicki Minaj.
What's up, what's up? This is Jay-Z.
From London, England and Washington, D.C., you are now tuned in to Conversations with Allison J. The Journey to Here, brought to you by Ethel May Books. This is Conversations with Allison J. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Conversations with Allison J., The Journey to Here. Today, as always, we have another captivating and thought-provoking topic and guest. Here's your host, Allison J.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Conversations with Allison J., The Journey to Here. I'm your host, Allison J. Today, we welcome our guest, Stevon Lewis. Stevon is a licensed marriage and family therapist practicing in the Los Angeles area. He works with individuals suffering from imposter syndrome, assisting his clients with understanding the scope of their imposterism, its origin, and reducing negative symptoms and behaviors that develop over time as a result of imposter syndrome. His goal as a therapist is to assist with developing solutions, gaining insight, and modifying behavior to bring about more happiness, satisfaction, and a sense of understanding into the life of his clients. He works with clients to uncover the underlying influences of their thoughts, emotions, and behaviors to create meaningful, positive, and lasting change in their lives. Yvonne Lewis. Welcome. Thank you for joining me here on Conversations with Allison J., The Journey to Here.
Thank you for having me. So I am Stevon Lewis. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm based out of California, Southern California, the South Bay area, if people are familiar with that. So my practice was in Torrance. That's where my office used to be before COVID hit. Now I'm doing only teletherapy sessions. So everything's virtual at this moment. Not sure when we'll return back to status quo. So I've been doing therapy for a while now. I got started way back in 2007, working with individuals involved in the juvenile justice system. So doing kind of that family reunification stuff, you know, as they were coming back from, like, you know, camp or placement or juvenile hall, and trying to get the families to kind of find ways to protect those kids from being removed from the home again. And I did that for a while and kind of moved my way up and then moved on to Woodbury University, a small private college here in Burbank, California. And there I was the director of counseling services. So I was responsible for the oversight of all the psychotherapy for the students there. So I supervised 2 licensed clinicians and 2 unlicensed clinicians. And we kind of just made sure that the students were kind of having their mental health needs met. I've always had my private practice on the side. And I jumped in full time in August 2019. And in my private practice, I specialize in working with individuals struggling with imposter syndrome. Kind of across the board, I have a ton of clients. A lot of them are, you know, Black, Indigenous people of color, and a lot of them are self-employed, so entrepreneurs. And so I kind of work with them to make sure that they feel connected to their successes. So I guess, like you were mentioning, like, you know, imposter syndrome is kind of more of a newer term that got kind of put on the map, I guess, more recently. But it's been around for a while. It was coined by a woman named Dr. Pauline Clance, and she's out of the University of Georgia. And she coined the term way back in 1978. And so in doing that, she was working with women in graduate school. And she found that even though they were performing well, that they weren't really feeling connected to the success. So they always felt like they were behind or weren't really good enough to belong in grad school. And so she named it, or she labeled the term imposter phenomenon, but people kind of know it more as imposter syndrome. And so I stumbled into it and kind of working in my practice, I kind of took an analysis, a look at the clients that I really enjoyed, and come to find out they had all these kind of things in common. Right. And these things kind of led me to say, well, what's going on here? Because these are people who in life, I look at them and I'm saying they are killing it. Like, they are making it happen. I'm like, you're winning at life. And for whatever reason, they feel like a fraud. They aren't able to connect to their success. They feel as though at some point they're going to be found out to not really possess the skills and abilities that everyone else can kind of clearly see. And so as I kind of delved into it more, that's how I kind of stumbled in and connected to imposter syndrome and working with the individuals struggling with it.
That's very, very interesting, because there's some of the things that you mentioned that were in thoughts and questions that I had that I wanted to put to you. Because like I was saying, because when I heard you speak and I started like imposter syndrome, I'm like, okay, so like, what is it? I'm just like, what is it? Because we know what the word imposter means.
Right.
And then syndrome. So, because I'm thinking, because you know, when we hear the word imposter, we think of like spy movies and things like that. Right? We don't really apply the word imposter on a personal level, that it could even remotely have any application to any area of my life.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm a real person, right? I know who I am. I know that I'm Stevon Lewis, and I'm okay. You know, you're Allison Day, and you're fine. But it's more of like feeling as a fraud, in the sense that the area you're kind of wanting to delve into, or that you're participating in, and that could be career wise, it could be in your relationship, and you just don't feel as though you are, that your success or the success you're getting is really because of you. And that's where the imposter comes in, right? That's where that term starts to kind of manifest itself, is that I feel like a fake in the idea, or in the sense that I am, don't belong in this space that I'm currently in, right? And so it's getting them to understand that that's not actually the case, that in reality, if you're in this room, you belong in this room. And you know, kind of working with them, you find all sorts of reasons why people, I guess, are able to kind of convince themselves that they don't belong in these spaces, even though they do. Like, again, we look at them and tangibly, we say, you are crushing life, you're killing it, you're winning. And for them, they live in this fear that they're going to be found out to be a phony, right? That they aren't really who people think they are.
And could that be, like, for example, in some cases, somebody that has worked their way up and they've got this amazing idea and they put these initiatives and plans in place and then they get promoted, but then when they think like, oh my God, but I don't actually have any like real formal qualifications, I'm up against people that have bachelors and masters and PhDs, and so I remember I used to think to myself, I'm in a room with people that, and they're talking about, yeah, I've got 2 degrees, I've got 3 degrees, and I'm like,
look at that shying away. Yeah, let me look at you. Don't look my way, because I don't have any of that stuff.
Exactly, and I'm thinking to myself, how did I get into this room?
There you go. There's that questioning.
How? Because it wasn't that, do I belong in the room? Mm-hmm. The first question, because before I even came to the feeling of belonging, do I belong, to ask that question, is how did I get into this room?
Right. That somehow you snuck in, or somebody allowed you to be in, and you were not supposed to have access to that room. And you're like, what am I doing in here? Everyone else is way better than I am. Right. And that's part of the lies that we tell ourselves. And you kind of find out, like, when you talk to someone who struggles with imposter syndrome, or, you know, kind of is battling it, you find like all these commonalities, at least I did kind of in my work. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what I found is that, you know, it starts kind of way back in childhood sometimes, often, is that you'll find that people had parents who were super critical of them. Right. And didn't really kind of share information about when they were doing well, but always kind of pointing out when they were, you know, not meeting the mark. So, you know, sit up straight, you know, don't walk like that. You know, chew your food. It starts off little stuff like that, but then it's like, you know, it grows into other areas. And so what the message is that we're getting is that for whatever reason, we don't do things correctly, right? Because our parents are always kind of suggesting or telling or sharing with us that we're messing up. So I must not know how to do things in an appropriate way. You also find that, you know, their parents, while they were often super critical, is that they often didn't, you know, or I guess reserved praise for when you had some major accomplishment. So like you had to graduate high school or college or get married or some, you know, once in a lifetime type of event in order to say good job. And so then the rest of the time you're kind of questioning yourself, saying like, well, am I really doing anything that matters? Because, you know, I brought home a 3.5 and all I got was that was what you were supposed to do. Right. And it's not like great job or that's amazing or fantastic.
Yeah,
it's like,
well, you
know, why? Exactly. Right. And so you start again, the message we're receiving is that we aren't doing well enough. Right.
And
so
nothing is good enough.
Exactly. Not doing good enough. And so that when you get into these spaces, it's almost a thing of, well, I know from history that one, I don't have what it takes, and two, that I, you know, don't really do that exceedingly well in most things because I don't get a lot of praise. What am I doing here?
Right. Yeah. And now that you say that, I fully identified with yes, because I do recall it, when you said that maybe somehow someone snuck me in. What came into my head was, you know, when a parent sneaks their child into work and they bring them into the meeting and like, shh, sit, yep. Don't say anything. Don't just make sure nobody notices you're in here.
Yep.
It was that kind of thing. It's like, if I say nothing, just keep my head down. People may not realize I'm here in this room.
And I can continue to survive and or remain in the room and not really get kicked out, right?
Yes.
Which is a tough thing because, like, what if you start to shine or do well? Then the fear increases because it's like, well, now I have more opportunity because I'm being more visible to get found out to be a phony and not belong.
Yeah, and I found that, and I'm not saying this to be US bashing at all, but I found like when moving here, more emphasis was put on degrees than back in the UK. So it was even more so like, because I remember I got a promotion, so they were recruiting to backfill the position. And the person that was my boss, he was looking through all these resumes and so on and so forth. And I remember he said, yeah, and look at this one. She doesn't even have a degree. And I'm thinking to myself, okay. And then he says, yeah, because you got a degree, right?
Eesh.
And I was thinking, do I lie? What do I say in this? Because the way he was so critical of the fact that she didn't have a degree. And then when I looked at because when you look at the job she was going to be doing, and I'm not knocking having degrees, I'm not knocking education or anything, but the reality was to do that, bearing in mind, the reason I was in that job is because he and I worked together at another company. He just loved how I worked, loved how I got things done. And I remember he said to me, should I ever leave here, whether it be to start my own thing or to move on to a competitor, I'm going to take you with me. And I didn't work with him at the time. We just worked in the same office, but he just saw how I did stuff. Lo and behold, fast forward a few years, that happened. Called me up out of the blue, like, sure, yeah, why not? So I've been working with him now in this position for years. Got a promotion. So, and I'm thinking to myself, so the fact that I was able to do this job so well that you wanted me to move with you and I got a promotion and all the rest of it just actually stands to reason that a person doesn't need to have a degree to be able to do this particular job. As long as they have the ability and the experience, that's really all that to me that's counted. So the way when he said that, I really shrunk back and I thought, well, if you need a promotion to do, if you need a degree, to do the job I've just been promoted from. What's the kind of lack in this promotion? Oh my God. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm hyperventilating. Like, oh my God, oh my God. Panic.
Yep.
Anxiety.
Yep. Immediately. Because it's like, oh shit, I'm going to be found out and I'm going to be screwed. They're going to realize I don't have a degree and they promoted me and I'm done. It's over. Yep. 100%. I mean, and it's funny that you mentioned that, like, you know, part of you know, not wanting to bash American culture, but it's kind of like in that corporate culture, right? And so, like, you know, people, especially when you're, you know, black or a person of color, is that, you know, in majority white spaces, which corporate America or, you know, kind of often is, or big business, is that, you know, the standards that are set are not really kind of normed or, you know, for us. They are more kind of based off of whiteness or you know, westernness. And so then there's this idea of we don't kind of line up with that culturally, then we're doing something wrong or we're kind of off base. And so there again is that disconnect that, hey, I'm looking around and the things that they value aren't kind of the things that I hold important. And so I'm not lining up. I also don't fit in. So when you're talking about your experience, like it's, you know, light bulbs going off in my head, like absolutely, it makes sense then that, you know, you aren't kind of fitting in these areas, you know, not knowing the race of the individual or whatnot, but like, there's this separation of, you know, you need to have these things in order to be doing things appropriately. And it's just that kind of set of standards that don't always necessarily apply for people who are gifted and talented in other ways. And maybe it's not academically, but can still get the job done.
Right. Yeah, and that was so, and this all happened before I heard you speak. So they started to, I'm just like, okay, that is, I don't think, because I would never have thought, I'm thinking, me never. Imposters, absolutely not.
Not at all. I absolutely belong in doing what I'm doing.
No, and I just thought, you actually, that has been the thing. And again, and it, that has been the thing, not just here in the US. When I was in the UK working in certain environments, yes, I felt like, and it's, I remember one place I was working and they were all so well-to-do, and they were all so posh, and I just thought, and then in comes this black woman.
Yep.
Right? Just, and I'm one of those, anybody that knows me, they're always like, oh my God, Alison, you're the only person that could say that and get away with it. I'm that kind of person, right? So you've got all these posh people and I'm the only black person in the entire company.
Absolutely, absolutely, and so, rightfully so.
And then I come in, and then after one, I'm just like, "How did I get in here? How did they pick me
right
over everybody else?" And I'm just like, "Okay, you just gotta square your shoulders, look the world in the face, and just you just gotta do it." But
right.
all in the back of your mind, you're still questioning how.
Right. Because you had confidence before you got into the room, and then like whatever happened when you passed through the threshold, it starts to disappear. The interesting thing is that for you, when you were talking about, you know, your experience and how you said, you know, immediately it turned into anxiety, right? And that's an important kind of distinction, is that, you know, while imposter syndrome isn't in the, you know, DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders, you know, kind of how therapists, you know, I guess, kind of, you know, diagnose and treat mental illness. But anxiety is, right? And that's one of the kind of offshoots of it, is that here's this response of where now I'm living in kind of constant fear, right? Or worry that's excessive about being found out to be, you know, not belong or be a fraud. And at some point I'm going to get exposed, and it's living in that fear, right? So you start to engage in all these behaviors to try to prevent yourself from being found to not be capable, when in actuality, this guy, you know, kind of pegged you a long time ago to say, hey, you have what it takes. Whenever I leave, like, I want to make sure I stay connected to you because you do really good work. But you forget all of that stuff.
Yes. Yes. Yep. That is very true. And I'm glad that you mentioned anxiety and things like, because that's what one of the questions I wanted to ask you. Mm-hmm. If you could quantify it, what does imposter syndrome feel like?
It feels like, I would say, kind of a consistent fear, a consistent worry that at some point in the future, that it's almost impending, you're going to be found out to be a phony, and that you've kind of disappointed or you've tricked all these people into believing you had skills and abilities that you didn't have, and that you're going to be embarrassed after you're exposed for not really being as such. And so people live with that on a consistent basis as they kind of travel through and embark in life, right? And so, you know, it shows up in different spaces that we kind of venture into, you know, so some of it could be at work, some of it could be in our relationships, and it's all based off of this narrative that we've kind of adopted about ourselves and who we are and what our abilities are. So like in a relationship, for example, you might tell yourself, I don't know what a successful relationship looks like because I didn't have a model for it, so I don't really know what I'm doing. Even if you've been with your partner for, you know, 6 years and it's been good and there haven't been, like, you know, any real problems that have, you know, I guess any deal breaker problem where you're like, hey, I'm done. I hate you guys. Like, we're not going to be together. You're still telling yourself that I don't know what I'm doing. So at some point I'm going to probably mess this up. And so then there's this fear of like, maybe I shouldn't commit further, or maybe I shouldn't move forward with this person because it's not fair to them, because they're going to find out I'm not really a good fit, right? And so then as a result of that thinking, then your behavior starts to, you know, maybe self-sabotage, or you do things that aren't really appropriate. Go for it. I see your point. Uh-oh. I did something.
You know, I'm so glad you're saying that, because as well as doing the podcast, I blog, and I actually started writing one yesterday. And I think, I can't remember, I sort of titled it something like, Live Again, Love Again, Don't Shut the Door. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I have put in there, it's when people that have gone through certain things in relationships and they, and because I was, because how I wrote it was like, there's a proverb that says, guard your heart because from it flows your life. But some people, they don't guard it. They barricade that bad boy in, right? And they put, and then they put it in a fortified castle on top of some mountain somewhere. Yep. And then they get into relationships with, and then they start to do and behave in a way that then self-sabotages the relationship. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy to justify, to say, you see, it was because, and it's like, actually, no, you already had this thing in your mind that it was kind of going to fail because maybe you felt you weren't good enough because of how the last relationship ended, or you felt you weren't good enough because the last relationship ended, or for whatever reason. So that was something I wrote. In fact, it wasn't even last night. It was in the early hours of this morning. So the fact that you have mentioned that, I feel like, okay, I'm actually on the right track with this blog and what I'm doing within that particular subject. But it is so true because I have seen that. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, I'm not saying I haven't seen it in women, but I've seen that more in men than I have in women, because they've obviously looked at it like they, and you know, because that emotion, that whereas women, some women, most women are, we can handle and deal with our emotions easier and then kind of move forward and love again, as opposed to how men can. So does that also fall under the whole imposter syndrome umbrella?
For sure. I think that, like, you know, what you're kind of hitting on is the idea of like vulnerability for men, right? And that men are typically socialized to kind of be able to express a wide range of emotions or talk about problems in a way that, you know, young girls or women are. And so then you, if I don't have the capacity or ability to talk about the concerns I have about myself and, you know, where I might think that I'm not kind of meeting the mark in terms of being a good partner, then instead of talking about that stuff, I internalize it, right? And so then it just shows up or it comes out behaviorally, and it's not, you know, coming out verbally, which would probably be a better approach. And so then, you know, maybe relationship ends, but there's something that happens or where men, and I think you're kind of hitting on, is that they have experiences of when things go bad and they feel pain, they feel sadness, all the same emotions. Like, it's not like men don't feel this stuff, just can't be expressed the same way, right? And so, like you said, that walling off or barricading, you know, of your heart, because, you know, I've been hurt, I hate the way that feels, I'm not going to ever allow that to happen again.
And men and women have both been on the receiving end of somebody that's been in that. And that's hard, like, especially if you know that that person has it within them to be a whole person in this relationship. But you see that inner, because they're just like, especially because when it comes to the blow in the hot and cold, because they come forward, then they start to remember that, like, no.
Yep.
What we're not going to do is go back there.
Yep, 100%.
Wow, that's interesting. I'm really glad that, I'm glad you touched on that, just to show that imposter syndrome can just show up in every area of your life, not just in the corporate world, but in your relationships. So
for sure,
that's really important. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, because again, thinking back, and it's like, I was thinking, one of the questions was, why do people suffer or experience imposter syndrome? And when I look at it, like, the same person, because I'm talking about myself here, because the same person can feel like, can experience imposter syndrome in one environment, but then be so confident in another environment. Like, prime example, I remember I went for this job. I knew I couldn't do this job.
I'm not joking. You at the beginning, I was aware I cannot do this.
I knew I couldn't do this job. However, I thought to myself, can't be that hard. I can learn it. I can absolutely learn this job. And I went into that interview, I aced the interview, I got the job.
Yeah.
I got the job. And it's actually happened more than once where there was another time they asked me if there's a particular skill I could do. I said, no, I can't do it.
You were honest with them. You were honest with them, like, yeah, I don't have that. I don't have that at all.
I went through an employment agency. They asked me if I could do this skill. I said, no. Mm-hmm. I got called for an interview. In the interview, they asked me. I said, no. I got called back for a second interview. They asked me. I said, no.
Yeah.
Not even 10 minutes later, I'm getting a phone call. They're offering me the job. So I'm like, okay, I want that. And this was in England. I'm like, I want £1,000 more than they're offering. They gave me.
Oh, nice.
They gave me. And I'm thinking, well, I can't do. I'm thinking, this makes no sense to me.
Right, right.
I went in there and I did the job. I learned. And as with the other one I was mentioning, it was both back in London. I learned the job and so on. But the fact of me, in those instances, I actually wasn't afraid of being found out. Mm-hmm. Because one of them, I didn't tell them that I didn't know or anything. I just went in there, talked a good game, got the job, bam, that was it. And while I was in there, to be honest, I don't feel like I suffered from imposter syndrome. Where I told them, no, I can't do that. And they still gave it to me. I think I was just honest with them up front and I learned it. But then there's been other positions that I'm actually more than capable and qualified to do. And that's where it comes in. Why is that?
Right. So you hit on a few different things. First, you talked about how it's not kind of universal, right? It's not across the board that we feel like an imposter in every facet or aspect of our lives, which is true, right? That with imposter syndromes, oftentimes it shows up in a very specific instance or situation. You know, for some people that could be career, other people it could be relationship. Others, you know, it might be in, you know, sports or whatever, or doing, you know, something creative or what have you. It's speaking in front of people. It's anything. And so, you know, in those spaces, we tell ourselves we don't have what it takes. So for you, like you're saying in your experience, though, is that interestingly, in some situations, you've gone into jobs and you felt very, very confident. And that's when you had no skill or didn't, you told yourself you didn't have the skills, right? So let's distinguish that, because you know, whether or not you really had them, it sounds like you had the skills, but somehow you convinced yourself of that. And then in other areas where you feel like, hey, I know what I'm doing, you feel maybe less confident. And I think part of that is about that narrative, right? And so in situations where you've told yourself, hey, I absolutely don't know what I'm doing, if you fail or, you know, perceived to be a fail in that situation, it's okay, because like, why was there was no real expectation that you would be able to do it effectively or successfully, because you already convinced yourself before you even started, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. So it doesn't matter if I get in here and it doesn't work out. I knew at the outset that I had no idea and no business being in here anyway. Let me just see if I can make it, right? And then in other situations where you're like, hey, I actually do know what I'm doing, we tell ourselves, well, now there's this expectation. Right. There's this expectation for me to live up here, perform up here. And that, what if I am not perfect in doing so? Then people are going to think I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to be embarrassed because I thought I knew what I was doing. And, you know, come to find out I didn't. You know, and we talk ourselves out of it, even though we've got the skill set and abilities. And, you know, what I try to teach my clients to get them to recognize is that you're telling yourself this, but like, you're also discrediting or dismissing all the information from the outside world that says they trust and believe you have what it takes, right? Mm-hmm. That you have the abilities and the skills to be able to do what it is that you're doing. Otherwise, they wouldn't have chosen you to do it. Mm-hmm. Unless you're saying you're that great of an actor, which possible. And then if that's the case, then why not, you know, have some faith that you'll continue to fake it and, you know, won't be found out. You continue to be able to trick people and act as though you know what you're doing.
That's interesting, because in one of them, I think the reason I told myself that I couldn't do it is because it's not something I'd ever done before. I've never even, the industry, I've never even heard of it before and what they did. And it's funny, it was like afterwards, this, because the thing is, there's so many companies and businesses and industries that we actually use very regularly and have no idea. And it was one of those companies that, so they, it's one of those companies where you had to do the forecast and the projections for flights to make sure there's enough food and meals and snacks and drinks and beverages and all that on the flights. And it's not something I ever, I mean, by the time I got that job, I've been flying for years, never stopped to think that there's somebody behind the scenes that actually has to do a lot of numbers and calculating and connecting with vendors and chefs and all kinds of things. So I was actually doing that job. I'd never even heard of it. The money was good. When I saw the ad, I was like, psh, okay. So it's because I'd never heard of it before. And I just thought, well, I've never heard of this kind of thing. I've never done this kind of thing. So, hey, can't do it. So I think, so to your point, it was more of that. I told myself I couldn't do it because it's not something I'd ever, ever heard of. And I went in there and I did the job. It was actually a bit boring. It was actually very boring. So, oh my God, this really is not funny. So that's actually funny now. Because speaking to you, I completely even forgot about that job. But I was just thinking about imposter syndrome and the fact that I think, speaking about people, they feel that more when it is actually about something they actually can do.
Right. There's a part of us of where we're embarking upon something new, and it's appropriate for us to have a little bit of, you know, angst or anxiety about it or worry or concern, because it's something we haven't done before, right? So we're trying it out new and we aren't sure how it's going to go. I think the distinction with imposter syndrome is that after being in that space for a while, we expect that feeling now goes away, right? Like if I've ridden my bike now, you know, 30 times and, you know, I've not fallen, I've been okay, I can safely say, hey, I know how to ride a bike. Give me a bike. I should be able to get on it, right? But if every time I got on a bike, I don't know how this is going to go, it's kind of like, well, why are we questioning it still? Because you've been doing it and you've been successful at it, right? And so I think that's the thing about imposter syndrome, is that feeling of mastery or the confidence never really gets in, even though you have exhibited evidence of being able to get the job done. And like I said, I think it's more attached to the fact of we are more concerned or worried about the expectations that other people may be putting on us and our ability to kind of meet those. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So. Yeah. Okay. So, and it's interesting you actually use the bike, because before you started to use the bike, I was thinking about driving a car. When you first start learning, you're going to be a bit anxious and that, because you don't know what you're doing and you're behind the wheel of something that could kill people, yourself included, right? And then as you get more, because now, and at the risk of sounding like the character from Rain Man, I'm a very good driver. I get in the car and I don't think about it. And I'm that person that I will go to different places. Like when I first moved over here, and my friends are like, oh my God, you drive in America, it's on the other side of the road. And I'm like, yeah, it's a car, it's a road. It's like, you just figure it out, don't you?
Exactly.
So there's certain things that you no longer think about and question the more you do. But when it comes to other areas of your life, the more you do it, the more you're getting anxious and questioning yourself and your ability, which is so bizarre.
Yeah, right. Because I mean, like the way you said is like, I know I can do this thing in this one area. Why wouldn't I be successful in this other area, right? Like it might be a little different, but I should still be able to do it. Just like you said, I mean, that's a great analogy, is the car. Of like, you know, in the UK, other side of the road, different, but you know how to drive a car. Like, so why couldn't, you know, it might feel a little different when you're over here, but you still know the mechanics and the fundamentals of being able to drive a car. It's the same thing, you know, I kind of use the analogy of like being able to swim. If you can swim in a pool, then you can swim in the ocean, right? Like it might be a little bit difficult. You got to gauge for waves and all that sort of stuff, but swimming, it's still going to be the same, right? Like you should be able to do that part. If you know how to swim in a pool, you should be able to do it in the ocean as well, right? And so, like, we talk ourselves out of it in situations where we say, now the stakes are higher, or, you know, there are more eyes on me. And it's like, well, you're discrediting now that you have ability or skill set to do it, to do what, you know, you've been kind of chosen or given opportunity or space to do. And, you know, on top of that, you're now dismissing all the other people who are essentially saying that they don't know what they're talking about because, you know, they've also agreed that you have these skills and abilities as well. And it's like, well, you know, who's wrong here, right? Like, everybody was wrong. Like,
oh my gosh, you
didn't know what you were doing and you were an imposter. And also all the people who think they know what it looks like for somebody that has the skill set and abilities, they don't know what they're talking about either.
That is very, very profound because you don't think about that because you think about, because as you were saying that, what I was thinking is, because we mentioned about the external pressure, but the reality is it really an external pressure or has our inner dialogue convinced us of this external pressure that really is not existing because these people are the ones that said, yeah, we believe you can do this.
Yeah, they signed off too. I mean, the way I label it is the inner bully, right? That, like, you know, just like a real bully, you know, that beats you up or says mean stuff to you, we all have an inner bully, right? And it's that inner voice that tells us or feeds on our insecurities or, you know, tells us that, in spaces when we aren't doing things well, it comes in and says, see, look at that. You know, you don't know what you're doing. There's those fears where we don't feel like we're really talented. You know, it shows up to make us feel terrible, right? And so it's more about being aware of your inability in the negative narrative that it's kind of telling you. And, you know, it says this stuff without really providing a ton of evidence. I mean, we know the inner bully is a liar. And so it'll say stuff that sounds real, but we've got to check that stuff out. We've got to say, well, where's the evidence to support that I'm not really good at doing what you're saying, you know, what I'm getting involved in? You know, is it that people have told me that? Have I been rejected from this a ton of times? Like, what am I using or what are you using inner bully, you know, to kind of tell me or convince me that I don't know what I'm doing? And I think that's the stuff that we kind of ignore or dismiss and don't pay attention to or aren't aware of often.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. The inner bully. Wow. Yep. Yeah.
It's a real thing. It's a real thing. You know, I mean, like me as a therapist, you know, my inner bully might say, Stevon, you're not really that good as a therapist. You suck. Right. And I can believe that because exactly. I can believe that. Right. I'm like, oh, yeah, but you aren't helping people. And it's like, well, OK, you know, let me kind of take some evidence and see what you give me. Right. Like, you know, where's the evidence to support that claim? And if I say it, I'm like, well, you know, people are asking me to speak about stuff that I do in therapy. You know, I have clients and full caseload and people are paying me and they keep coming back. So, you know, while they may not have said directly, Stevon, you're awesome and amazing, they've also kind of shown that they value what it is that I do, right? And so I can't really, you know, listen to the inner bully and say and believe it that I really suck, because I guess I'm saying then if I truly suck, then why would I even have a practice? Why am I surviving? Why have I not already been run out of the profession?
That's true. And thinking about it, if we actually really all listened to the inner bully, I think the basket case is sucking our thumb underneath a sheet somewhere.
Yep.
Because it's true, because you just, when you think about it and you're going into a situation and you're anxious and your heart's pounding, palms sweating, literally just like, oh my God, I'm sweating, stop this.
And
you're just paying attention to what the inner bully is telling you.
Yep.
And yeah, that has the potential to turn us all into a basket case.
Yeah, because we're accepting it and we're believing it to be true. And what we aren't doing is asking the question or challenging it and saying, well, provide me some evidence to support that what you said is accurate.
That's why a lot of us should never be left alone with our thoughts.
Yeah.
Just should not. Just like, no.
Yep.
Somebody said something to me the other day and I said, listen, I'm not trying to get into your head because I barely want to be in my own.
I love it.
Out there. So in that case then, so how do you know if you have imposter syndrome and what are the symptoms? Because could imposter syndrome like mirror some other symptoms, which are normal, healthy things? Like, because it's normal to have some anxiety when you're going into something, right? It's a bit normal to be a little like question yourself a little bit, because that basically shows that you're not cocky.
Right.
So how would you say that it's in a syndrome, imposter syndrome, as opposed to it's just the normal levels of anxiety or uncertainty that we all feel from time to time? And what are the symptoms?
Right. And so I think the way I kind of see it is that it starts to impact the way we function, right? So it starts to impact our daily functioning. So that's my kind of key indicator, if you will, as to when it's more of a problem than just, you know, that healthy level of anxiety that gets us to be effective, or, you know, a healthy level of concern, right? So when we think about emotions, you know, they're like categories, especially when we're talking about negative emotions, is there like the healthy version, like the healthy kind of, you know, looking at it on a spectrum, and then the unhealthy range, right? And so the healthy range is like, you know, worry or concern. Unhealthy is anxiety, right? So that when we move over into the unhealthy realm, like we aren't really being productive still, we aren't able to kind of be our best version of ourselves, we still get things done. Whereas like when there's concern, it's like I get more focused and I pay a little bit more attention so that I don't make mistakes. Anxiety, I'm not even engaging in things because I'm so fearful that I'm going to make a mistake. So where I look for, you know, to see if like imposter syndrome is having the issue is that how is it showing up in your life? Are you so worried about being found out to be a fraud that you are now not kind of seeking out promotions that you might be available for or appropriate or right for? Are you not kind of, you know, pushing yourself to try new things because you're saying you're going to suck at it and you're not going to be successful? You know, are you not trying to, you know, really get in relationships or stuff like that? The other side is that, like, you know, are you also feeling maybe a bit more depressed? So we talk about the other side of anxiety and that depression is that, you know, is your imposter syndrome causing you to feel like you're a failure? Like you're kind of behind everybody else and everybody else is ahead of you, right? So that you're now saying you don't have what it takes, I'm not really that good, and you're in this negative space and not really feeling good about yourself constantly. Like that, to me, that's a huge problem. Like I don't think that, you know, we should walk around hating ourselves all day long. I think that you have some good to offer, and other people would probably say so as well. Like, are you perfect? Maybe not. And then some of the other unique ways that it shows up. Right. Some of the other unique ways that it shows up is that, like, it'll show up in behaviors that we reward, but it's coming from a bad place. So we'll think about people who are, you know, so concerned about being found out to be a fraud. So that now that they're like working extra hours late, and people will say, oh, you're dedicated. Look how committed you are. This guy really loves his work. And it's like, no, I'm actually fearful that I've made a mistake. And so I've got to make sure everything is absolutely perfect. And, you know, all my ducks are in a row. But it looks like this person again. Yeah, exactly. All the time. And we're rewarding that saying such a hard worker, dedicated, you can count on them. And it's like, no, that's coming from a place of fear. Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, some of those behaviors that'll get rewarded in different spaces when in actuality, it's coming from a place that's not really positive.
So let me ask you then, this is slightly off topic. Do you think that's how workaholics are born?
I think there's some element to that too, right? I mean, workaholics, it could be a little bit of imposterism, or it could also be this, you know, I define myself by what I'm able to produce or accomplish. And so that they are in a place of where unless they're doing something or accomplishing something, or, you know, then they don't have value. So if their self-worth is tied up into what, you know, their career is, or what their, you know, their identity is tied up in that, then you might see them kind of put more time in those areas than maybe we would say is you know, appropriate or healthy, considering.
Okay. Because as you say that with the long hours and making this all done, because in some circles that would be called a workaholic.
Right.
But if the reason behind it
yes.
is because you just feel like they're going to find me out, so I have to make sure I'm on top of my game, like you said, all that my ducks in a row all day, every day. Mm-hmm. And you have the risk of, you know, imposter syndrome, but yep. a workaholic.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, there are labels for it. I mean, you know, call it the types of imposters. There's like the perfectionist, you know, who if everything's not perfect, then it's not of worth. There's that. There we go. We've identified her. Yeah, that, you know, everything has to be perfect. Otherwise, it's trash. And, you know, that comes from, again, this feeling that I don't belong. So I have to do things to a degree that's excellent. Right. And you put this pressure on yourself. Other people are like, you know, what they call the Superman or Superwoman, so that I've got to go above and beyond. And, you know, not only does it have to be perfect, but it has to be great, right? So it's not that, like, I did everything correctly. Like, I had to do something amazing for it to really count and for it to be seen as of worth. So it's, you know, you had to fly a rocket to the moon by yourself in order to say you're good at you know, physics or whatever. And it's like, well, time, if that's the litmus, then, you know, most everybody sucks then, because not everybody's been able to accomplish that stuff. So it's like, you know, just these different types of individuals that kind of show up, and their imposterism kind of presents itself in a different way. I mean, there's also the people who have to kind of, you know, the expert, right? That's what we call them, that they have to study everything in order for them to say they know anything. It's not that, you know,
in the room all the time.
Exactly. That, like, you're telling me you have to have read every article on imposter syndrome for me to be able to talk about imposter syndrome. If that's the case, then nobody will ever be able to talk about it, because it's always information being produced and written about it. So, you know, at some point you have to say, you know, enough to be okay. But people who are experts are like, well, you know, I've learned this, but, you know, I'm no expert. I don't know this. And this person knows more than me. And it's like, well, I mean, that's the thing, but I'm saying, you know, enough to be able to do this part. That's all I'm saying. But for them, that's not okay. I've got to do all the trainings. I got to do all the workshops. I got to read all the material before I feel enough confidence. And I'm still not super confident, but now I feel like, okay, I can do it. Because again, if I'm an imposter, I have to know all the answers. Because if I get asked something and I don't know it, I'm going to be exposed immediately.
Yes, because there's many times that I've been having conversations and I've said something and they said, and I'm like, you know, you don't have to know all the answers.
Right.
It's fine for you to not know all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be guessing and trying to figure it out and feel like the pressure's on you to come up with the answer. We're just talking. We're just talking. So yeah, that, and I do know people like that. And I think some of what you're saying, I could identify with, because in some of the things that I do, because when I was in the UK, I had my own wedding and events company. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you're doing somebody's wedding,
yes,
the pressure on doing,
you know, there are no opportunities for mistakes here.
Exactly. So then you hold yourself to set this high, ridiculously high standard, mm-hmm. and of perfectionism, that then you see it start to go into other areas of your life. Because I got to admit, when I first started doing weddings, I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
I told myself that a lot, because I am one of these people that I get an idea,
uh-huh.
and I just go and do it. And then I'm like, what am I doing? I don't even know what I'm doing. It's like, how? Or I fall into things by accident, because the way that I even got into doing weddings was, a friend was getting married in another country, and I saw that she was doing all the work. I'm like, so where's your bridesmaids? Where's your mm-hmm. family? Where's your this? So I'm just like, shh, I'm not having the bride doing all of this. This is ridiculous. So I stepped in and I started doing stuff. But then I'm just like, no, that needs to be like this. And this needs to be like this. Because then I put that pressure on myself, because now it was this self-proclaimed thing. Because nobody actually gave me the position.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just because I just didn't want to see the bride doing it. So, but now I took on this whole thing, like, people now think, and that was at the time when that movie with Jennifer Lopez came out, The Wedding Planner.
Oh, yeah.
I started calling these people, and I started to get really mad, because people started calling me the wedding planner, but really, yeah. I wasn't the wedding planner. I was just a friend attending the wedding. But because that label was then being put on me, I felt this pressure to be perfect, because the reality was I didn't know what I was doing, because I wasn't a wedding planner.
But you were planning a wedding, so it's like, which one is it? Is it because you said you aren't, or is it like, you know, and that's it. Like, people get caught up in the what, you know, or the how versus the what, right? And it's like, you know, it's the process versus the product. Like, because you are telling yourself you don't know what you're doing, then you discredit the fact that you're getting it done, right? And so it's like, you know, you get caught up in the how, you know, as opposed to the what. And it's like, you know, what is the outcome? The outcome is that you made this wedding go off and you made it easier and she was grateful or whatever, and it worked out well, as opposed to the fact that you're so hung up on the fact, I'm not a wedding planner. It's like, that doesn't matter if you're getting stuff done.
That is, it's like this, I feel like I'm in a therapy session, Steve, on this is not what it's supposed to be. Okay. This is not about me. Okay. So it is not. So now everybody's kind of getting into the inner workings of my head.
Let's find out what Allison's got going.
My head, that is not the place you want to be. I don't want to be in it. So okay, so that's but as you mentioned earlier about the woman that coined the phrase, and I was actually going to ask you, do you find that women suffer from imposter syndrome more? And that was really based on an article I read. But the article wasn't just saying women. It says that, and I'm going to read it. It says, why imposter syndrome hits women and women of color harder.
Yep.
And I thought, when I saw that, I was like, I'm just going to ask that question. Do you see it affects women more than men, or men more so than women? Because there's a lot of pressure on men. And they don't have that outlet the way that women do, where I could just call up one of my girlfriends and be like,
Right.
And it's done, gotten it off my chest, and I'm like, I'm good. Whereas men don't have that outlet so much as women, because they just like shrug it off, go for a run, go to the gym, they figure something out to do. But so the fact that women still have that outlet, but yet it hits women harder.
Yeah, I think it's more about that, the way that, you know, society is kind of set up, right? So that, you know, when I talked earlier about like kind of corporate culture and how it's kind of normed or based off of, you know, whiteness or westernness, and a lot of that is male dominated. And so then if you think about, you know, the gender differences is that, you know, in women, when they behave in certain ways, it gets labeled negatively as opposed to positively if a man did the same thing, right? So, you know, if you know, she's assertive, they say aggressive, or, you know, she might get labeled a bitch or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And it's like, well, time, you know, because when Chad did it, it was okay. But now that, you know, when she's doing it, it's not. And so there's a problem there. Right. And so I think like when you start to say, well, why do women feel maybe more like they struggle with it more, is because, well, oftentimes maybe the message they're getting is that what they're doing is not okay. Like who they are isn't okay. And so they feel like, well, maybe I don't fit in because now I've got to adhere to this larger societal kind of, you know, I guess a label or way of kind of behaving, and I've got to fit in this box, but I'm also operating in this larger kind of context, and the way that I operate in this box or remaining in this box doesn't really lend itself to me being successful in these other areas, so that I've moved up, but also I'm like the only woman in the room. So, you know, I don't know that I really fit in here because I look around and no one else looks like me. And same is true for, you know, people of color, right? Is that, you know, being kind of not fitting into kind of the westernness or whiteness. And so then you start to say, well, if I moved up into spaces where there aren't a lot of people of color, I start to question whether, you know, I belong in this space, right? Like, so, you know, if I'm in a majority white, you know, institution and, you know, I'm the only black person there, then it starts to think of like, well, hold on, how did I get in this room? Because nobody else is in here. Are we not supposed to be in that space? And it goes both ways, where like people will look at you like, hey, what you doing in here kind of thing, even though like your skills and abilities are what really got you into the room and that's why you belong. So like, you know, don't self-select out. But you see it a lot in different professions, like, you know, maybe men in nursing, you know, women in tech, stuff like that, where it's like, okay, wait a second. Traditionally, this isn't the case. You're in here. Do I belong? And I think that's where the imposter syndrome or imposterism comes from.
And it's interesting. I'm glad you touched on that. As a woman, you're seen as aggressive, because I think it was quite a few years ago, probably about a good 15 years ago, that actually was said to me. A man said to me, Alison, as a black woman, if you behave a certain way, you're going to be seen as aggressive, combative, argumentative. A white woman would be seen as passionate, enthusiastic, and assertive. And I looked at him and I thought, no, because I was not going to accept that. Guess what happened? I was working for a company, and I was the departmental coordinator / office manager / assistant to the head of the department. And there was a woman, and she may have been a little bit mentally unstable, because some of the
just a wee bit.
Yeah, because when you think of some of their behaviors, when you look at it now, it's just like, wow, okay. And I remember there was one of the editors went and spoke to him, and she went off and she threw something at him, and it turned into this big thing. And so the head of the department kind of cowered away from it. And I just went in and I was like, psh, I'm not having this. And I went and I dealt with the situation, calmed everybody down. And I because I'm one of these people, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to go in there all guns blazing. Let me talk to each party, find out what happened. Because you know what? Your side, my side, truth. So, you know. And so I went to him and he told me what he said that caused the outburst. And he says, to be honest, I could have asked her for cheese. She would have reacted like that. I thought, oh, okay. Went to her and she, like I said, she was just having a little bit of a meltdown, workload and all the rest of it. And unfortunately, it kind of came out on the young man. So I dealt with it and all the rest of it, no problem. So then the head says, oh my God, thank you so much for dealing with that. I'm thinking, you know, that was way like several times over my pay grade, me dealing with that.
Right.
That's like, okay. But dealt with it, no problem. She thanked me. But then when it came to my review, she said to me, you know, you're a little bit scary. And I'm like, but I didn't throw nothing at nobody.
Right.
I'm like, hold on a second. Hold on. That girl didn't even go, she didn't even go to HR. Nothing happened.
Right.
I definitely took care of it. Everybody, as you were, nothing to see here kind of thing, right? I'm scary. Like, I took care of your stuff that you didn't want to take care of.
Right.
I'm scary. And I looked at that and it was just like, I was told this.
Yeah, that's annoying.
That you're going to be seen as aggressive when another will be seen as assertive, even if you throw something at somebody.
Yeah. That was okay. It's you're the one who's scary.
Yeah, so it's interesting that you should say, and that's never, ever, that's never left me, that experience.
Mm-hmm,
I think
mm-hmm.
because of that, thinking about it could be why women and women of color, when they go into a room, they kind of have to, what's the word, almost dumb themselves down.
For sure, for sure. It's a management technique, right? So that you don't do what you can, you know, if that's even going to be successful, to kind of, you know, break these fears that other people will have or these stereotypes or prejudice or, you know, implicit bias or whatnot. And it's like, you know, I don't know that you can really do that. And it's not really your issue. It's their issue. Right. And that's the thing, though, is that, you know, I think that imposter syndrome kind of lends itself to kind of manifesting as a result of having to navigate, you know, these different arenas and not be our true authentic selves.
Interesting. So to wind up here, my last question to you is, how do you overcome imposter syndrome and can you?
For sure. Yeah, I don't think it has to continue to be debilitating for you. For me, and I would say get into some therapy with someone who kind of knows how to treat and attend to it. Learn how to
do an opening for me, Stephen. I'm just like,
yeah. You know, you can find me, but I mean, it's also kind of, you know, becoming aware of your inner bully and the narrative that it's kind of telling you, right? And you for, you know, challenging or looking for that evidence to make sure that you aren't kind of listening to something that isn't really 100% accurate or true, right? That if something you're saying something, then it should line up with some, you know, evidence to support that. And if that there's a miss there, then we've got to question why that might be. That either, you know, the evidence is true or wrong, or, you know, what the inner bully is telling you is probably inaccurate, is where I would tend to lean. And then kind of, you know, getting to a place of where you're doing some of that deeper work if it's related to stuff that happened in childhood and you adopted this negative narrative about yourself, and maybe saying, hey, we don't need to hold on to that anymore. How can I let that go? How can I change my perception of self? And all that stuff can kind of, you know, come from awareness and insight into yourself. And a lot of that comes from being in therapy to do some of that stuff. So I give a bunch of worksheets to kind of assist and practice with that stuff so that you can get better adept at being able to kind of combat your inner bully and change your perception of self.
That's interesting. Thank you. Because it is one of those things where I was wondering, can you overcome it? How do you overcome it? And then it just led me to think, so you know, why do some people suffer from it and some people don't? You just don't tell people that. I heard this guy say, and I was just like, it blew me away. Somebody was mentioned something about his work and whatever. He goes, why? Is that because I'm a cocky MF? I'm like, okay. No, sorry. He said this in work at the front desk.
Yeah.
But yet, I says, maybe that's why you're at the top of your game, because you don't have imposter syndrome. You're just going out there, just doing your thing, and boom, that's it. Whereas other people, they sit there literally biting their nails to the stub and to the quick, like, and it just made me think, why some and not others? But it's the same thing, why some people suffer from depression and other people don't. It's
the person.
I suppose it's the person listening to that inner bully, their inner dialogue, and what they take from it.
Yes, 100%.
Wow, thank you. Thank you.
I
have some work to do, so thank you for that.
Yep. Quite welcome. Glad I could be of assistance.
Yeah, so what's next for you, and where can people find you?
So the best way to kind of find me is either my website, www.stevonlewis.com, or on Instagram. That's probably where I'm most active, kind of in social media wise. That's at Stevon Lewis MFT, Mary Frances Thomas. And I'm doing a bunch of stuff. I've got more podcasts I'm going to be taping for people. I'm working on an imposter syndrome workbook, and, you know, still kind of doing some therapy, but doing more speaking engagements. So dialing therapy, face-to-face therapy, or, you know, kind of telehealth that I'm doing now, dialing that back a bit, and engaging in more workshops and, you know, speaking engagements or whatnot.
Excellent. So if people wanted to sign up for the workshops or get the workbook, they can just go on your website and you'll just keep that posted, or you'll put the information on your social media platform.
Both. Yep. Yep.
And that's, can you spell your website, please? I just want to make sure people can get there.
Yeah. It's Stevonlewis.
Thanks.
Like Stephen, but O-N.
Okay. StevonLewis.com.
Yep.
Excellent. Stevon, thank you. This has been great for me. This actually has been a therapy session for me, because I just remembered things like that job that I was like, wow, I did that.
I'll invoice you then.
You have my email address. No, but seriously, thank you. I've learned so much, and I'm so grateful for your time and your help, and just what you're doing to just help us be a better version of ourselves.
Thank you. Thank you, Allison. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Stephen. Take care.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
All right, bye.
Thank you for spending time with us. We're already looking forward to the next episode of This is Conversations with Allison J. The journey to here. Until next time, honor, respect, and blessings to you all. If you want to connect, visit AllisonJ.net. That's AllisonJaye.net. Allison with one L, as she is the one and only.